Big show for you here today. Nate Tice joins me in the Fantasy Film Room once again to discuss wide receivers that are rising, a different specific type of wide receivers that are rising, and some guys that are a little under the radar that you should be paying attention to. We also talk about some wide receivers that people have left for dead that might be coming back. Tutu Atwell back in our lives again, perhaps. And we will also tell you who is the coolest team in the NFL while... Well, before previewing Thursday Night Football, let's get into it. Enough of this. Let's get into the show. It's Thursday, September 26th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Nate Tice in the Fantasy Film Room. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. It feels nice. We didn't have a doubleheader this week, so we just had our single game. We get it nice and juicy. Couldn't touch on the rookies yet. We are, but we're not. It's not, you know, we both said to each other, we texted each other last night, like, gotta wait till that round number of 4 weeks. Yeah. That just feels more like the rookie check-in. 3 weeks is just a little too early. But I'm doing fantastic as football season just keeps rolling and rolling me over. That's what it feels like.
Absolutely being barreled over by the takes, by the games. It's great. It feels awesome to be in sort of the rhythm of the season now at this point. And yeah, like you mentioned, Nate and I do want to do a rookie kind of check-in. I think we're going to do that on next week's show for the film room topic because, yeah, I'm with you. 4 games, that feels pretty good. I can chart probably at least 2 full like game samples for some of these rookies here. And yeah, you never know. Like one of these guys might surprise us here in week 4 and someone we really kind of have to talk about. I think we actually will maybe just touch on some of these rookies in the first segment that we'll do here in the film room, which if you're new to the Fantasy Film Room, because you're just a huge Nate Tice fan and you found out he's on this show. And I mean, Nate, you do move the needle. You have a rabid fan base. So welcome to those people to my show.
I think it's the other way around. They're like, we get Matt in here. And then they're like, who's this guy with the mismatching hat?
I don't know about that. You're a Wisconsin legend, Nate Tice. I'm just a humble man in my little box here in my office. But again, for the new people, first part of this show, Nate and I will take kind of a trending fantasy topic, dive into, really sink our teeth into it, try to make those as big picture as possible. We will not just talk about the Saints for 20 minutes like we did on last week's episode. We will get a little more wide reaching, though it was good. And then in the second half of the show, Nate has some topics that he is nerding out about. And then one topic that, you know, after the success of the Quentin Johnston segment last week, Nate, you know, maybe one take that we just want to whisper. We just want to say the quiet part out loud is what we're going to call it. We're just going to whisper some takes in that segment. And then finally, we'll wrap it up with a Thursday Night Football preview, which much to the chagrin of our producer, Colin Brennan, I want to take kind of a deeper dive into this game, Cowboys at Giants. But we will get to that later. Let's start with our first topic here, which, again, is one of my choosing. And once we get into this topic, people will definitely realize it is for sure a topic of my choosing. We had kind of a continuation, or what we had last week, Nate, was a little bit of a discussion once we got into the Saints thing about modern offenses versus modern defenses and, you know, how do you attack these different coverages? That's been a big topic on the football media scape the last week. So I kind of want to dive specifically into the receiver position here. I've been thinking over the last couple of weeks that maybe we need to reimagine which types of wide receivers matter more in today's NFL. And it was actually Bills wide receiver Khalil Shakir who got my gears turning on this back in week 2 after Thursday Night Football. I did write a piece about this as well. And I know that sounds weird because it's like Shakir kind of had like, what, 5 catches for 50 yards in that game. He's actually caught 100% of his targets, which is a pretty sick little stat. Shakir's a good player. Let me say that right now. Good football player. Liked him a lot as a prospect. Really liked what I've seen from him at the NFL level. But he was the one who sort of got my gears turning on this, Nate, because the Bills do not have an alpha receiver. They don't have that typical number one, but they have a good collection of receivers. I actually think that their week 3 usage of their receivers is pretty ideal for you know, what you want out of a modern sort of receiver room to kind of defeat these coverages. You need your sacrificial X, which is what they've got Matt Collins doing. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman was suspended in the first quarter for being late or whatever, but he's kind of that downfield ball winner. Not the role that I would love to see him in, but the role he is playing right now, he's the downfield ball winner. And then they've got this guy in Shakir, who super reliable, gets open, and he does something with the ball after the catch. And that's sort of where I kind of want to take this conversation, because in my analysis, I've usually been partial to route runners and separators, Nate, and I am still partial to those players, and I do think Shakir is both a good route runner and a good separator, so it's not as if he's totally outside of this box, but I still think that generally, when we're looking at the best receivers in the league, I think you have to be successful in the intermediate area. You have to win your routes there to be like a tier one, tier two receiver in the NFL, in my opinion. But the reality is, like, most guys are not going to reach that level. So what are we looking for in other players to fill out good receiver rooms? I think it's guys like Shakir, able to get the ball in their hands quickly with these layup routes and have them do something with it after the catch to create explosives as defenses work to limit those. So that's sort of my table setting thought here. And we can sort of talk about why that matters with different coverages and things like that. But I kind of want to expand on this receiver archetype specifically.
Yeah, it's something I've really, and just I always prefer receivers that are the traditional X, that can win vertically, can win versus press, can win isolated. But as they like to say in The Wire, the game done changed. Like they have now, you have to be covered too. That and it's not just that's the primary coverage, but that's the one giving issues to offenses, in the sense that protections are a little shaky right now, and you have to protect to push the ball. And so why I'm saying that is, you need receivers that are good against cover two, and usually those are ones that either can win intermediate and down the field on dig routes, on post routes, on corners. So usually you have to be a bigger target, not 210, Mike Williams, 6'4", you know, like that, but just decent enough size and can make yourself friendly to the quarterback. I'd say Chris Olave is maybe like the minimum, like, yeah, in my brain, like that's the minimum size threshold. So 190, give or take, you know, his size. But also, guys, you already mentioned it, creating explosives is now the name of the game. That's what defenses are trying to limit. So how do you create explosives as an offense? Well, I just mentioned one, which is pushing the ball with those bigger routes. You have to beat zone now more and more, more often, even just crazy zones that teams are getting to. And zone, again, bigger targets, you know, more available to the quarterback, smarter. That's where Shakir is so great at it, is he's so smart. And he's big enough to be able to be friendly against zone. So those are the things that kind of is a craftiness, an intelligence, and a size threshold that I'm looking at. And again, it's not the traditional Mike Williams. It's more just you hit a threshold kind of type. But the other thing, we're creating those explosives with the ball in your hands. That's it. Malik Nabers is so valuable, and why I came around to him as a prospect, even if he had some things I was a little limited issues with him. It doesn't matter, because he can create explosive out of nothing. And that is what you need. The play caller can't always be perfect. The quarterback can't always just be like, oh, this route's this play is going to get you 15 yards guaranteed. Sometimes you have to take that bubble or that 5-yard slant, that 5-yard hitch, and you as the receiver creates 20. You as the receiver creates a touchdown. And I think my brain has switched a little bit, that's what I'm chasing for everybody, especially just seeing how other receivers get used and what can truly be a needle mover as opposed to just good. Like, I really liked Roman Dunze. Roman Dunze is going to be fine. He's a little banged up right now. But the thing is, he's so different than Nabers. And he's a ball winner, can wind up inside and out and everything. But Nabers can go, I can take this route, touchdown. And I don't think Odunze has that, where he can dunk on somebody and then he falls into the end zone. But it's just a different skill set. Both valuable, but one I'm even shifting of what I value more as an evaluator. I just said value in three different ways. But as an evaluator, just watching these guys. And you want guys, where Khalil Shakir, and we've talked about this, is so perfect for a modern NFL, is he has no tendencies as a receiver. He can line up in the slot. He can line up outside. He can line up on ball. He can line up off ball. He can be in motion. He can catch the bubble, or he can block for the bubble. So if you can beat tendencies in lining up inside and outside and lining up everywhere and having that versatility, even if you're a B level player at those both spots, I think that's more valuable than, say, a Christian Kirk, who is truly slot only 90% and has to, like, cannot operate on the outside, because when you're on the outside, usually on the ball, usually have to deal with press. Usually your route tree is a lot more limited. Outside routes, and this is kind of how it works in my brain, outside routes are like planes. Slot routes are like helicopters.
Mm.
Like they can go every which way. So if you like think of those kind of route trees, all right, if you're a guy that can't get off press, can't win with physicality, yeah, it's going to be pretty hard to win and make a living that way. So that's where, and we look at the receivers that succeed. CeeDee Lamb, of course, can line up in the slot, but he can win on the outside. A.J. Brown can do both. Even kind of second tier guys or third tier guys. Godwin, I mean, shoot, you have a couple of guys in his list. Godwin, Devontae Smith. Mike Evans is truly an outside guy, but he's so dominant at it, and he can create an explosive because he can win on the outside. He can dunk on a guy, and then he can still create yards after the catch. He's always been underrated as a speed, kind of his long speed. So I it's a long-winded way to say it's like versatility and explosiveness, which is always something you value in any player. But I think that's just something that I think should just be cranked up. That can they win inside? Can they win outside? And can they just win, you know, take a 2-yard route and take it 20? You said that you like guys that are route runners and all that. And I think, well, I agree. But I think that was so valued before, where we saw more three match across the league, you know, right. Cover three match, and those turn into man situations. That is why those guys were so needed. And now I think there's just a little, you still want those. You still want man beaters and everything. But I just think that zone beaters and guys that can create a little bit after the catch are kind of cranked back up as far as what you're valuing when you're watching these guys.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff there. And I've been saying, you know, for the last probably 3 years now that, like, in reception perception, success rate versus zone is becoming more and more important. Like 5 years ago, it was like, okay, great, you're a zone beater. Congratulations. There's a lot of zone beaters out there. Like, I need you to, because of those match coverages, I need you to be able to beat man coverage. Mm-hmm. And like, I still think ability to beat man coverage is our best. Like,
you
have to have it, and it's our best individual player, like, because I think it's a little more player isolating when you're tracking ability to beat man coverage and ability to beat zone coverage, because you can scheme so many things. Not that these zone only beaters are bad players or anything like that. It's just, again, I think that if we're thinking about how do we take talent and project that into opportunity, that ability to beat man coverage and press coverage is still incredibly important. And once you get to, like I'm saying, these tier one, tier two receivers, like those guys have to be able to beat man press coverage at a pretty high level. Just is what it is because of the way teams are going to play you. But like, I also think about some of the players that I've missed on in the last like few years. It's a lot of these Elijah Moore types. It's a lot of these Jahan Dotson types. And I don't think those guys are like terrible NFL players or anything like that, but they're not priority players for any NFL offense that they've been on, because they are just, they're route runners and they're small. And I'm not the receiver sizest guy, but again, rethinking about it, what we're talking about with like physicality and coverages and things like that. Like, yeah, Elijah Moore, I think, and Jahan Dotson too, can go out there against outside press man corners and get open. But yeah, like, how many quarterbacks are going to take that throw? And should they even take that throw, right? Like, right. I mean, shoot, Deshaun Watson should not be taking any of them throws right now. I mean, he can't do anything right. I mean, Sam Howell last year with Jahan Dotson, he's not taking a lot of those throws either. So it's just like, it becomes, the margin for error becomes smaller because they're not size-based players. They're not going to win in tight coverage, even if they are open, right? The windows are not going to be necessarily what you want them. And then like, okay, well, let's take the smaller guy that's a really good route runner and move him into the slot. But like, there's a big difference even between being Khalil Shakir at 6'1", 190 and like Elijah Moore at, you know, his size or whatever. So you don't want to put those guys in the slot because they're not doing anything with the ball in their hands, basically. So that's sort of where I'm like, from a big picture standpoint, reimagining like which receivers I prioritize. Now, to turn this into like kind of what we're talking about with the like the players right now that are the best players in fantasy at the wide receiver position, guys that have 16 plus points per game. You mentioned some of these names, but number one is AJ Brown. He's only played one game, but he's also a tier one alpha receiver that checks all these boxes that we're looking at. Number two is Malik Nabers, who I think certainly looks like an alpha receiver so far, but I'm with you. There are still some things that I'd love to have tightened up with Nabers, even at the NFL level, but you can feed him so many layup touches and he can do things with the ball in his hands. So he checks this sort of, he is like
Garrett Wilson did a lot for me for scouting Nabers.
Totally.
Where I was like, these guys can work. Like, these guys that are just they're not teach tape. They just do stuff, like, and they get open. And as a quarterback, I'm like, but now as like I've really looked at the NFL landscape, I'm like, yeah, I'd rather have the juice than like the perfectly polished, you know, can do this, this and that. You know, I'd rather have the juice because they can create some stuff that I can't teach.
And I want to discuss Neighbors a little more in when we get to the Giants in Thursday Night Football. But like those two guys actually were, I compared them a lot as prospects. They're back to back in like my stacked prospect board. They're both tier one prospects to me too. So like both those guys, but a lot of similarities. I sure as hell wish that Garrett Wilson got the amount of layup touches that Malik Neighbors does, but that's a conversation that's for almost another time. And
we'll talk about that in a minute, actually.
We will talk about that. But yeah, like Malik Neighbors, he's like the peak of this archetype. He's like, if you were take an alpha receiver who also does these like Khalil Shakir things. So yeah, I mean, that's great. Number three is Juwan Jennings, which is kind of LOL Rams, but also a guy, Nate, that I know you and I have appreciated as sort of a reliable dirty work guy. So maybe he could fit in this archetype, but definitely these next two names. Chris Godwin, he's that power slot yak bro. Rashee Rice is another layup touches yak bro type of player who is like, I've been charting Rashee Rice. He's still not like a great route runner or anything like that, but he's just always open against zone, and he's always open against zone on these little crossing slant routes, little whip routes into the flat, things like that. Mahomes pins it on him accurately, and he consistently gets yards after the catch. Yes. And then the next two guys are Justin Jefferson, obviously tier one alpha. Nico Collins is an alpha receiver. Tier two, maybe. I don't know. Nico Collins is so good. I'm not quite ready to say tier one, but like he's
so good.
He's right there to me.
He has the fastest play for any ball carrier on offense this year, Nico Collins?
The 6'4", 210.
He looks bigger.
Yeah,
he looks like 218 now. Like, but that long ball in week one, I think it's so far it's the fastest offensive play by an NFL player, offensive player this year with the ball in their hands. So yeah, that's good. That's what you, when we're just talking about big and being explosive. That's Nico Collins all the way.
Yeah, and so like the point here is that there are definitely the alpha receivers, the AJ Browns, the Justin Jeffersons, the Nico Collinses, but these other guys that I think can be high quality target earners and like fantasy difference makers, even if they have, I would say, some holes in their game, with a guy like Rashee Rice for sure. Even Amon-Ra St. Brown, like I think he is another one that's at the peak of this archetype, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I think he's consistently gotten better every year of his career as a press man coverage beater, but certainly his first season, I said this a lot in the offseason, like Rashee Rice, year one reception perception looked a lot like Amon-Ra St. Brown, year one reception perception. Now, St. Brown's consistently gotten better, but that zone beater, get the ball in his hands quickly, can you, a quarterback, he can be almost like a quarterback settler. I think Godwin has been kind of a Baker Mayfield settler so far this year, and he can do things with the ball in his hands. Like, these receivers matter more, both in the NFL, and obviously that trickles down to fantasy as well.
Yeah, and it's just they're reliable. Like, that goes a long way with quarterbacks. And we just mentioned before, like, the difference is man and match and zone. And zone, I think some of that, you know, some of the first read stuff that, you know, stats I see out there are going to be a little skewed when you play zone, because you need multiple options when you're beating zone.
Yeah.
A lot of zone beaters are high lows, which is it's two guys that you're looking at and then usually get to a check down. So really three options based on the coverage. While if you play against man or match, it's like, well, that's my man beater right there. Mm-hmm. Slot fade, crosser, this outside slant, you know, yada, yada, out route to the field. And I think when you look at all these guys, Godwin always has been, so, you know, he always gets those screens, and he's just like, he's the simple yard getter. Like, he just knows how to plant his foot, get north, and he gets those simple 5 to 7 yards after the catch. That goes a long way because now those aren't wasted touches. There's so many bubbles getting thrown down, so many receiver screens getting thrown out. The fact that these guys can get what I call the simple yards, break one tackle. Rashee Rice breaks the tackle every single time he touches the ball. It seems like he's on that Jamar Chase path. Mm-hmm. So all these guys, again, can beat zone, and they have enough juice to beat the one-on-one matchups. Like Juwan Jennings' best route, just anecdotally, you probably actually have the numbers on this, are those little slot out routes that they run for him on third down. He's a monster at them because he's big, and these guys all have to respect how big he is. So they're like, oh, this guy's going to blow past me. And he just runs a quick little out route, and he's such a big target. Brock Purdy puts it out there. Snag. Yep. He can fully extend. That's a big target to throw out there. We think of big targets just as jump ball guys. But when you're throwing to a zone, it's nice to have. I'd rather have Mercedes Lewis, you know, than Grant Calcaterra.
Yeah.
You know, when I throw in, against zone, that's tight ends. But still, I'd rather have, no offense to the guy because he's a great route runner, I'd much rather have a Nico Collins than a Tank Dell.
Totally.
Because just those are the targets I'm throwing at. So these guys just all make sense. All these guys, what's AJ Brown? 220. Neighbors is, well, his weight was all over the place, but above 190. He was 195-ish. Juwan Jennings is 210, I believe. Chris Godwin, 210. Rashee Rice is 208. Justin Jefferson is 200, like just about 200 around the dot. Nico Collins is 215. Big. And that's, of course, this is after my own heart as a bit of a sizist, as a football evaluator, but I think there's just ramifications or it matters more now just based on what defenses are doing.
Yeah, being able to get that size and explosiveness in the slot matters so, so much. Because, you know, Nate, you and I definitely have been having this conversation a lot the last couple weeks. Yeah. People are talking about, like, oh, too high and stuff. Like, it's just limiting everything underneath. Yeah, for sure. Like, these guys, you can get the ball in their hands quickly. I get that. Like, that's going to be one way to create explosives. The real way to do it, and we're going to talk about an offense that is kind of doing, is, like, put your big boy pants on, block it up, and, like, push that thing into the intermediate area of the field, like, down the field, man. Like, over the middle. That's where we, like, and those are still the star receivers. Where does Nico Collins win? That area. Where does Justin Jefferson win? That area. But for the other guys that can be super productive in the league, the ability to, you know, get a lot of designed touches. Like, I mean, it's funny you brought up the first read target stats from Fantasy Points Data. Like, the top five players, ironically, a lot of the guys we talk about, Cooper Kupp, you know, only two games, Malik Nabers, Rashee Rice, Chris Godwin, then Justin Jefferson. Those guys are all top five. Justin Jefferson, they also track, you know, what they call designed target, like percentage of designed targets. Justin Jefferson, zero designed targets, like screens and things like that. But yeah, Chris Godwin, 20.8%. Rashee Rice, 27.6%.
The Vikings run bootlegs and just go, hey, Justin Jefferson's the main guy. Yeah. So that's why it screwed me up. But no, but like screens and stuff, yeah, they don't run any of those for him. So that's actually an interesting stat. Yeah.
There's definitely ways. They're designing ways to get Justin Jefferson the ball. It's just not that type of way. So let's turn this into sort of a practical conversation here. Who are some receivers that maybe are a little under the radar right now that could kind of qualify into one of these layup touches, power slot, yak bro, this sort of receiver archetype? We obviously talked about Khalil Shakir. I keep coming back to Shakir that I just don't know how much volume he's going to get on a weekly basis. But like, my God, if they ever fed him, and he's not, if he starts getting 8, 9, 10 targets a game, he's not going to catch 100% of them. That's a little bit of a Josh Allen stat as well, but still, I don't think they're going to be getting 100% catch rate on the more volume they give him. But I do think he could thrive in sort of that St. Brown type of role. Mm-hmm. But who are some other guys that maybe fit into this archetype?
Another favorite of ours, Drake London.
Yeah,
I think. And now they're starting to pepper him a little bit. God, it's just so funny. Like, that Kirk Cousins is so funny though to watch play quarterback because no wonder coaches love him.
Yeah.
Because he is going to throw the ball exactly where it's designed. There is no going rogue with Kirk Cousins. And sometimes it's one of these where it's like, throw it to London on this play, but he's going to go, nope, number one reads Darnell Mooney.
It's like, so come I'm on, throwing dog.
Mooney. And I know. It's like, I know technically, like, Kirk, you're right. But London's right there. Like, London's coming behind as number two. And
there's been so much Ray McLeod, like so much more Ray McLeod than I possibly thought.
God damn it, Arthur Smith. But it's really something. The designs are, actually, I was enjoying watching that Falcons offense against the Chiefs and a little bit against the Eagles. But a lot of it was just Kirk is going to throw exactly how it's designed, even though, like, even when Darnell is the quote unquote alert, which is technically the one, but it's not the one. And I'm guessing Drake London is the one, but Kirk's like, hey, alert, it's open, I'm throwing. Yeah.
Yep.
Good for the offense, bad for us that want to see more Drake London. But he's to me, like, the guy that's so easy to group into this. He could be a power slot. He's blocking his butt off. He's great against zone, at least anecdotally when I watch him.
I agree.
I think he's tough in those short, I would say intermediate areas to match up one-on-one as well. We saw him, you know, score that touchdown against the Eagles and everything, but he's one that is just perfect. Pick a Colts receiver. outside of Downs, you know.
Yeah.
But the other three guys, like meaning Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman, and A.D. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell's swimming right now. I'm sure we'll talk about rookies next week. Yeah. But those guys are what you kind of want now. That's maybe why Pierce is actually kind of perfect, even though he's not like a one or anything. And we know what he is. He's going to be like a super role player. But he's perfect right now because he's big, he can win deep, and he's decent against zone as far as finding the soft spots. Don't want him running outbreakers, though.
No.
Which is good, because that's against man. So everyone runs zone against us. Oh, I actually meant to mention this. I know we're talking about receivers, but teams are scared to run man if you have a scrambling quarterback.
Yep.
And that Josh Allen runs teams out of man. And so that's why, like, when you could say, well, they don't have an alpha receiver, so why don't defenses just man them up? It's because you have to have good the quarterback luck. Threaten them. And that's why maybe you play the Ravens. You won't see that. Like, oh, are we scared of Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman? It's like, yeah, but they're scared of Lamar running for 30 yards. So if you have a quarterback that can threaten them, you won't see as much man. So that's also kind of like another variable with this. But he's one that comes to mind. The guy we brought up last week, Ladd McConkey, even if he's not bigger, he's big enough. I think we got to separate that he's not Wes Welker. He's 6 foot, 190 plus. He's good against zone. He has a feel, but he can win inside and out. But he's another guy. These are kind of younger guys.
Just want to touch on the London point really quick, because I think London's starting to come around from a fantasy perspective. You know, touchdowns and back-to-back games. I get one of the touchdowns on a busted coverage for sure. You know, they're coming up for Bijan, whatever. But I do think they're starting to figure that out. And that was what was so annoying about the week one film for Drake London was like, that was the role I wanted. Like what they were doing with him, they're moving him around. He's off the line of scrimmage. In our boy Arthur Smith's offense, he was just always the X receiver because he's the biggest dude here. But they're actually like, okay, we'll just throw Darnell Mooney in that role, and like he's not ideal as an X receiver, but we're doing something to get Drake London free. In a lot more in breaking routes for Drake London as well. He is definitely running more in breakers than he was last year for sure. So he's a great name. I would throw out Jaden Reed as a name. I know that he's not the biggest player either, but he definitely fits into this player archetype. And he's still like his numbers look good because of week one, but like he hasn't been the most productive in last 2 weeks. Like he's still somebody I think is a decent like buy low trade target
to catch too,
like, dude. Yeah, and it's crazy because I didn't really think he was gonna be that guy in when scouting him, but then like he so clearly was in week one. And I like Romeo Doubs to a degree. I really like Dontayvion Wicks as a player. He's been eating into Christian Watson snap, which is good. Like that less is more with Christian Watson, and like we need more of Wicks, I think. But Reed, I still think is gonna get like consistent looks here. Like the guy that's going to get consistent targets is Jaden Reed because he can do all of these things that we're talking about. So he makes a pretty good buy. Two rookies I'd throw out here. One, I'm kind of mixed on both of these guys as players, but I wonder just from like a player archetype standpoint, one is Xavier Leggett in Carolina. Because Deontay Johnson can obviously run any of these routes. But he has mostly just been their X and not like a move around guy because he's their only press man beater on this team right now. And that's why they got him. So like, that's a totally different role, but Leggett's a guy that I think probably could thrive in some of these Rashee Rice ways. They might get over indulgent with him as a vertical guy because of size and speed and things like that. But I do generally trust Canales. And I know a couple of the plays he made last week were on these in-breaking horizontal routes when he's off the line of scrimmage. So he's another one. And the other one I threw out there, I don't actually know how you feel about this player at all, but and I was very like, I don't know about him as a prospect. Thought he went aggressive in the draft, but Luke McCaffrey in Washington. I don't know. I was a little rich.
I had a day three grade on, but yeah, I was a little rich.
Right there, I get
where you're getting at here, but yeah, go on.
Right there with you that it was rich, was aggressive. However, I do kind of see the vision with how they've used him so far as this like slot player. Lot of Mickey Mouse targets for him in the first couple weeks. A lot of Mickey Mouse targets in the whole offense the first couple weeks. But you know, part of me watching that game on Monday night against the Bengals is like, hell yeah, they're finally like dunking on people downfield, which is like, you have Terry McLaurin and Jaden Daniels. That's what you should do. But man, they could really use a player who is just consistently open against zone coverage and can do something with the ball in his hands. Could that be Luke McCaffrey? Maybe. So those are two rookies I think are obviously Legette might have gotten some steam on the waiver wire this week because Adam Thielen's injury, but two guys that I think are low rostered in fantasy that could maybe fit into this archetype as the season goes on.
Yeah, and McCaffrey makes sense. Like, I mean, they're trying to figure out what Dyami Brown and whoever's opposite Terry. Like, Terry is a, I mean, I know everyone owns him at this point, but he's a great candidate for this discussion as well because of size, being able to win vertical, and actually he's a hell of a blocker as well, but which does matter. You have to be able to threaten the block. But if you want to know why the Bills offense is clicking right now, watch those guys throw watch a bubble go for 8 yards as opposed to 1 yard like every other offense. It's because those guys block their asses off.
Yeah. No, dude, Steph Diggs.
It's real.
You're my guy. I love you. But there was a lot of like little hands, you know, like, all right, we're doing a little this, that, and the other one. We're blocking in the Josh Allen
the
Bills
best.
Offense.
Yeah. It's the best. It's the best. It's how they get those yards, though. They gotta threaten them. I guess because he is such a weird player for me. Another rookie would be Brian Thomas from the Jags, but again, everyone owns him and everything. But he's another one that down the road is this because he's adding more stuff to his game. Got that? But
yeah, the damn Jaguars just need to actually get some meat and potatoes in their passing game. Last year
I was about to say something really mean.
I know. I wanted to stop you. I don't trust anything in Jacksonville right now, which is unfortunate because I think Brian Thomas has looked good and he would be a great candidate for like off the ball because you have Gabe Davis as the ultimate sacrificial X, which I mean, dude, it's just Gabe Davis. What are we doing? But like you've got a guy there to clear things. You got a guy there to clear things out. Brian Thomas is absolutely going to add more to his targets in the open field than Christian Kirk. I think Kirk's a fine player, but Thomas is just at a different level, size, speed, ability to break tackles in the open field. You know, we talked about Quentin Johnston last week. I always said that Brian Thomas was the more actualized version of Quentin Johnston. So, get the ball in his hands. Let him do some things after the catch. He would be a great candidate for this. The problem is that the Jaguars went from like all short, dinky, dunky bullshit last year to now all they do is push the ball down the field, which I know they're trying to get Brian Thomas on these big post routes and split the two safeties and things like that. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, let's make him the first read on the front side of a concept and just like Trevor hits the back of his drop and just pin that ball on him on an inbreaker.
5-6 yards, just get to 8 yards, just let him roll, let him slant something, get him rolling. He's just hit the ground. We've talked about this, but he hit the ground running way quicker than I was expecting him to be. But the thing is I'm just like, I want to nuke that franchise right now because they just make me so upset. Yeah. I'm really just kind of thinking, just going roster by roster too. I mean, like younger guys, like, you know, McMillan with the Bucks. I know just like he's not perfect for this, but he's another guy that can go inside and outside. And it's down the road as maybe other touches disperse as the season goes along or others as further seasons go along. He's more of a dynasty guy, I would say, to be kind of looking at. I'm sure plenty of guys already look at him anyways, but I just think his role makes sense because he can do so much. That's why Ndunze with the Bears, even if he's not the most explosive guy, made sense to me that being a good player because he can be inside outside, can do all these things, can be like Chris Godwin. That's the guy I compared him to. So that's like, just thinking all these young players. We're talking about rookies anyways, but that's just another guy that in redraft leagues probably isn't the most popular guy. I know he's owned probably a decent amount, but you know, I'm sure there's some that he's very available, but that's one I know they're trying to make work. Maybe as he gets healthier, it helps. I don't think Keenan Allen's going to be much in that offense, even when he comes back. And DJ Moore is his own thing. I struggle to describe DJ Moore other than that he's good. But I guess he can count as this, but he can kind of do a little bit of everything. But Ndunze is another guy, a younger guy that I could see being perfect if the Bears kind of pull their heads out of their asses, which I think they will. There's decent signs there. It's just the run game is pretty terrible right now.
Pretty much a disaster. Yeah, we'll see.
So bad.
I hope let's get another game in on Ndunze and see, because I was really encouraged by what we saw in week three. And from a results standpoint, whereas the first 2 weeks was like, yeah, he looked good on film, like they need to get him more involved, which they did. So, I like a lot of those names you mentioned there. You know, maybe again, like the Legettes, the McCaffreys, Brian Thomas, definitely like a trade buy low type of player.
I like the Legette one a lot. Yeah.
This is Legette's, to put a final point on this, Legette is the classic type of player that a little bit like Rashee Rice when he came out, although Rice was so difficult because he was playing in like a MVS role at SMU. And yeah. It's like, well, how, and then you just played a completely different role.
He became a yak guy. Still the most confusing evaluation to rookie year usage in recent memory for me.
Andy Reid, definitely better at this than I am. So like that's kind of one thing. But yeah, like Gets a classic guy that I would have been like, don't see it at all. Yeah, but same. I see the role for like in this type. So it's expanded my mind to who can be like a high end target earner in today's NFL, which shout out to Khalil Shakir for getting my gears turned on this.
Right. I know. I like this. No. And Canales is, you know, is he the perfect play caller, play designer of the world? No, none of these guys are, but at least he's like very realistic about how guys should be used. He's not just going to go like, oh, you're this big, you should be doing this. He's like, no, he used to look at how Leggett should be used. Like, Leggett's not is a unique prospect. His profile is one of the most unique ones, I think, as far as just his background, how long it took him to see the field and all those things. But I don't think he has a grandiose vision of like, oh, I'm going to ask him to run Davante Adams route tree right away, or I'm going to treat him like Chris Godwin right away or anything. No, he's like, no, this is what you're good at. I'm going to make sure you're good at this. So, so
yeah, on draft night, I remember people being like, yep, Dave Canales is clearly ticketed Xavier Leggett for the Mike Evans role because size, speed. I was like, no way. And then the next day he comes out in the press conference like, yeah, like jet sweeps, get the ball in his hand in the open field, and like talking about maybe routes out of the backfield, out of this, like the whole thing is like, okay, now, yeah, Dave Canales knows what he's doing. He's not like, yo, size, speed, I put Leggett in the whatever the Mike Evans role is. Yeah, there's a role for the guy who has like a 1,000-yard seasons every single year. That's just a role in Dave Canales' offense.
6'5", 235, and can run past people. Yeah. Just replace that. Or it's like any receiver that gets a handoff now is the Debo Samuel role.
Who's gonna play the Puka Nacua role in the Rams offense? Yeah. Puka Nacua.
How many times did you hear that?
Tyler Johnson looks like he's playing the Puka Nacua role. I don't think so. He's not even playing right now. Which
the sacrificial Tyler Johnson, like sacrificial Puka Nacua role. It's not the sacrificial X. It's not Puka Nacua then gets the play action pass after he does all the block. It's like, no, you're just blocking.
Just stretch the zones out horizontal for me to pin it on somebody else. So that's a great transition actually to one of the topics we're going to be discussing next. So let's take a quick break and let's get into it right after this. All right, Nate, we're back. Talked a little bit about teasing the Rams here in this section, but this is basically for Nate's things he's nerding out about. He's got a couple of wide receivers back from the dead. Tell me, Nate Tice, who are a couple of these wide receivers you think might be back from the dead?
I'll transition us nicely to a receiver that's the complete opposite of the usual type of receiver I've like, and that on an offense that I kind of left for dead a week ago, and they still might be dead, but they had a nice zombie reawakening, reanimation this weekend, and that's the Rams and Tutu Atwell. Tutu Atwell is in that offense. It never made sense to me where they want to get these big burly guys blocking the 11 and a half personnel kind of tight, and then they get one of the tiniest receivers I've ever scouted, who's like a long speed guy. And I was like, okay, maybe that's Brandon Cooks's role, I guess. And I don't know. They try to make him work, they being Sean McVay and the Rams staff. And now, because of injuries and because of Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua's injuries, this Rams offense, who got a couple linemen back this week, they actually were clicking a little bit as far as the run game, but also just using Atwell. And Stafford had some faith in him and throwing him the ball early, getting him throws on the move. They're not going like, hey, you're going to block anybody. That's truly never going to ask him to do that. But it's going to be a lot of these types of games for him going forward, as long as one of the other guys are hurt. The three catches for 80 yards, you know, the four catches for, you know, a bomb. It's all going to be 15 plus yard plays. So it could be volatile to have him on your roster. But if you're desperate, I think this is very real in this offense because Demarcus Robinson is still the auxiliary role. Tyler Johnson, like we just joked about, they're running more 12 personnel. At least they did this past week because they have no receivers. They went from zero snaps of anything. They went 100% 11 personnel, three receivers, to half their snaps being out 12 personnel this past week. And which is maybe if you like Colby Parkinson, but they're still not getting touches to tight ends in that offense. Mm-hmm. So when they throw the ball, it's still receiver centric, and Tutu's the one that they has the most experience. It seems like the most faith. And even though Demarcus Robinson in some weird way has some faith with Stafford, But I just think Tutu Atwell is actually a live one. If you're looking for some desperate, hey, I need a guy for a couple of weeks, because it might be, again, it's going to be high variance. It's going to be based on what they can get. But if this defense, what I think there is, but I think they're pretty mid. And I think this offense is going to be just always trying. Stafford's going to be back there whipping it. He's not a coward at all. He doesn't care everybody else is hurt. He's still going to try these throws. So I think Tutu Atwell is the beneficiary of that, as along with the running game, of course. But yeah, it felt more real than I thought against the 49ers when I reviewed it. It was like, oh, okay, this is a real part of the offense. This isn't just, oh, he luckily got a bomb and that was the one catch. It was like, no, these were part of the offense and structured part of the offense. So not my ideal player in the world, but Tutu Atwell's back for the dead for at least a few more weeks until the reinforcements come for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, look, he ran around on 86% of Stafford's dropbacks in week three. You can do a lot worse than a player running around on 86% of Matt Stafford's dropbacks. All right. So DeMarcus Robinson, as you mentioned, still the lead receiver. Him and Colby Parkinson were tied for the most routes run on the team. And, you know, I do think, dude, it would be really nice if they started throwing the ball to old Colby Parkinson, because we could use all the help we could get at tight end at this point in the fantasy football season. So he's definitely, again, I want to see like a game from him first, but he is definitely sort of on my waiver wire speed dial that if I'm one of these teams that doesn't have a reliable tight end, which is most of them, from a fantasy perspective, the second I see like a game from Colby Parkinson, I'm trying to add him right then and there, because the role seems like it should be there with none of these receivers available, but we'll see. But I agree with you. Watching that game, and that was one of the games I got to see the most of on Sunday. It does feel like, we always talk about designer targets and how you track those and things like that. They are designing shots down the field for Tutu Atwell. And the more that though, like, they're going to need those shots, man, because they're not going to get consistent, I think, separation and play from any of these wide receivers at this point.
The run game is going to be the jab. And it's not where, like last year, what was so beautiful about that offense was, they kind of get to anything they wanted to. They go, oh, okay, we're going to jab with the pass game. We're going to jab with the run game. But it's like, actually, now we're going to go for some shots. Oh, now we're going to do this little, we're going to do a run play that's meant to design for a gash as opposed to just a jab. Or we're going to run a pass play that's intermediate attacking. That's where Puka Nacua is just phenomenal. It's just that 10 to 20 yard area, 10 to 22 yard area where over routes and all those types of things where he's just, again, another big player that it helps to have against zone coverages, because he's tough and willing to, and you can find him as a quarterback. But now that they have to be reconfigured, I don't think they have any illusions of like, yeah, we're running high lows with Tutu Atwell over the middle. It's like, no, bombs. It's get him past everybody. And it's not going to always hit, but I think they're realistic about what they need to attack with. And looking at their schedule, the Bears defense is really good. But it's a zone heavy defense. Mm-hmm. I think how Stafford looks to attack it is bombs, because he's not going to try and nickel and dime with DeMarcus Robinson and Tyler Johnson and Tutu Atwell. Packers cover three, little single high stuff. Okay, you might catch them. That one's a little interesting. That one might be, but again, we brought up the Colby Parkinson thing. That's maybe a Colby Parkinson game, like where that one actually makes sense. And then they got Raiders and the Vikings. Vikings is gash or be gashed. You have to punch him in the face. So again, these are hit spots. Like it might not work, but these are opportunities where this actually, the path lines up for Tutu Atwell to catch a bomb.
There's a bye week for the Rams in week six before Raiders Vikings. So I wonder if we do start to maybe get Cooper Kupp back, maybe Puka Nacua off. We'll see. But I do like all of that. And yeah, look, Dalton and I put the Rams in the coping corner back after right away after week two. Little regrets about that, because Kyron Williams is obviously, well, we said Kyron Williams is still going to be like a fantasy starter just because of the amount of work he's going to get. We'll see if they can get these receivers back and like Tutu Atwell can hold the fort down for a couple of weeks here. I like this pickup and this kind of call from you here. There's another one you want to talk about here, which is a Jets wide receiver.
Yeah, though, and this guy, and I already mentioned him earlier because this is kind of the archetype I usually like, is Mike Williams, receiver now with the Jets. It almost was a fun transition because I was going to say some LA receivers. And it's like, oh, Mike Williams is no longer with the Chargers, so this doesn't work. But
you're going on the complete opposite of the size spectrum. There's your transition.
I am. No one is bigger than Mike Williams. And his snaps are increasing. They went from about, I think, 9 snaps in the first game to over 30 snaps in the last 2 weeks. Last Thursday against the Patriots was kind of a non-factor as far as like, or not needed. I shouldn't say non-factor. He wasn't needed really in the second half. But I think that he's getting his legs back. I think Rodgers now has some trust with him. He threw him a 50-50 ball and Mike Williams came down with it because Mike Williams has never made a normal catch in his entire life. And I think why I want to mention him is when they go against a team like the Broncos this next week, who have a guy named Patrick Surtain, who is the best corner in the game. He is probably going to be on Garrett Wilson, and they like to blitz a lot, and they like to put Surtain on the number one guy or figure out a way to get him near the number one guy. That's Mike Williams' opportunities. I think that Broncos run defense is actually pretty damn good. So if we get a lot of third and longs, we get a lot of, you know, negative run script, and they have to throw the ball. Like this last week against the Patriots, that was ideal for the Jets. No, of course they won, but ideal game script. Nickel and dimey, keep it third manageables. Rodgers can kind of do his thing. He can kind of control everything. I think if you get into a more pass heavy script, even though it's Bo Nix against the Jets defense, I think that if this is a little tighter, that Mike Williams gets some opportunities to go make a play against insert corner name here. And I think that's what he's in a good spot this week to maybe, and I think his legs are coming back. He hasn't broken 20 miles an hour yet. That's another thing I got access to. So it's pretty nice with next gen stats. He's increasing his max speed every week, which nice. Is like, okay, the legs are coming back. So I think he's kind of lined up for a decent week this week as far as matchup wise. But then also I just think faith and with Rodgers where also he's like, well, Alan Lazard can only get so much. Williams was in on 12 personnel looks, you know, two receiver looks, I should say. So it was before Lazard went in there, even though Williams is still working back. So he's trending upwards. I'm saying all this after he came off, what, a 3-catch, 36-yard performance. But I think, if you're looking for a stat, someone to find, someone to add, that's probably not on a ton of teams, really, because of what has happened. This is one that you can maybe put on your bench and just have, you know, warmed up for you.
Even Lazard, Lazard is what he is, you know. Yes. But...
He's a dirty work guy. Rodgers loves.
He's the bottom of this like archetype of receiver that we talked about way earlier. He's like the bottom of that archetype.
The anamorphs, he's the first one. Correct. As it transitions to Chris Godwin at the end.
Yeah, right. Blocks and, we'll go over the middle, do the dirty work, that type of stuff. But not a lot afterwards. Although he did have a great play yards after the catch against the Patriots. That was great.
And I actually like Lazard as like a football player, but it's just funny. Rodgers thinks of him as
he's obsessed
with true number two. Yeah. And he's like a number four, right. Maybe.
But because, and I made this point on yesterday's show, because I think Rodgers looks good right now.
He does. His arm is,
The live is great. The live arm looks great. And that was clear against the Patriots. That just increases my interest in guys like Mike Williams, in Alan Lazard, because I think Josh Norris made this point on Twitter. Every time there's like a good Aaron Rodgers season, it's one alpha, which is still going to be Garrett Wilson, although he might have a tough matchup this week. I at least like that they got him 50% routes from the slot in this game against the Patriots. Like they're trying. I don't love the way they're doing it, but they're trying to get him these like more layup targets and things like that.
That's what
it's
one and done read plays. It's Garrett better win or this play is dead.
Do you know what Rodgers' time to throw is when he's not pressured?
Oh, it's like 1.8, probably
2.1. It's crazy.
It feels that way, especially on third down. It's like third and five, third and six, slant, inside slant to Garrett Wilson. I can almost guarantee you what they're running.
100%. So it's like, because I do like the way Rodgers looks, I'm at least interested more than I maybe thought I would be in these guys like Mike Williams and Tutu, and excuse me, not Tutu, Alan Lazard. So and I think in an ideal sense, you would like it to be Mike Williams because you kind of do need that X receiver to move Garrett Wilson around and to do these things. And if you're going to try to keep him away from Surtain, you're going to want to have him as the off-ball player and you're going to want to have someone take those reps. So we'll see what they do. I'm not super confident in the Jets offensive design and schematics and things like that, but I'll give them credit for trying. And I'm with Nate that if Rodgers is looking like this, we're at least interested in Mike Williams and some of these other ancillary Jets players. Before we transition to Thursday Night Football, Nate, in honor of our Quentin Johnston segment. And shout out to
Whispers.
Yeah, shout out to user and listener on Twitter at Sir Hoffy was the one who suggested this, saying you guys got to name a running segment saying the quiet part out loud. So when applicable, I think we should try to do this every week, like a whispered like take. I'll do mine. I'll do it this week. Nate, I kind of think that the Seahawks are just like the coolest team in the NFL. And I know that they're 3-0, right? which, so, okay, maybe that's not like a whispered take. Maybe I should say it more with my chest. Like they're freaking still 3-0, but it does feel like they're flying a little bit under the radar right now. I'd love for you to talk about what you've seen from the defense and things like that. I'll just say from an offensive perspective, you know, that play with almost like a dig and go route that DK Metcalf ran, and Geno Smith talked about it at the presser and said it was like a read play. You know, and we're having this conversation, Nate, about all the way at what I said back at the top. When we're having this conversation about beating too high and like, oh God, what do we do? Like, we just got to throw the ball underneath. Or you can have your high-end quarterback strap on his big boy pants, block that up, and push it to your freak show wide receiver. I love the way they've used Metcalf this year. I've loved the way they've used all these receivers. I think JSN kind of fits into this bucket of players we talked about earlier. He's not a blocker. He's not quite like a dirty work guy, but he's a slot player at least, and you can give him some layups. But I love the layups they've been giving DK. Beside the route I just highlighted there, I just really like the way this offense has been designed from a pass game standpoint. Pretty much exactly what I expected it to look like. I think Geno's playing great ball right now. I think DK's playing great ball. I think the usage for JSN has been, you know, it's going to be hit or miss. It's going to be some weeks he's in some weeks he's not. That's what you get out of like a seventh round fantasy pick. So no whining about that. I generally just like the pass game. I think the run game looked pretty good last week. It's been a little hit or miss so far, but I think last week was a pretty positive showing for them against Miami. So from an offense perspective, I think this is an ecosystem to buy, because they're attacking defenses the right way, not just Mickey Mouse little stuff underneath. Like, let's really push this thing down the field.
Yep, and that's why I was interested in Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, and it made sense with how he used Michael Penix the last few years at Washington, and then now he got Geno Smith, and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to fit like a glove. Geno's willing to stand in there. He's willing to rip that thing. And that is, again, like you just mentioned, you need that right now. We talk about receivers that have to do it, and well, quarterbacks have to stand there and do it as well. That the digging up play was great. We talked about a little bit on Football 301, and that was a nice change up off of what they do a lot. And it kind of shows how good of a coach Grubb is Geno really likes to be an empty. And Grubb was like, okay, all right, we'll do that. We'll stay in empty. I do empty. Let's do empty. And that play was a motion to an empty play, and they set it up the weeks before, which is really cool to see that they're already setting up changeups so early in the season. And it doesn't just lead to like a 12-yard gain that I'm highlighting on Twitter for seven likes. It's a 70-yard touchdown, you know? So it's kind of cool to see a changeup go, you know, just get knocked over the fence. So I loved it. But Grubb knows the personnel. It's nothing revolutionary. It's just good old sound concepts. There's nothing I've seen where I'm like, oh, that's new. It's more that he gets to him in very fun ways, meaning like he'll shift from one formation to the other. He'll motion this guy. He uses stacks a lot. He loves using switch releases where guys are stacked up. They run the same routes, but they're switching. And it sounds simple, but it actually can pop a defender's brain because they have to sort it out, and also can just create space. I'm a fan of what's going on in the offense. I think it's a balanced offense. They're going to be committed to the run as well. I'm not just saying that in a macho sense, but I'm saying more in there's going to be game scripts where they're going to be more pass heavy, more run heavy. That's a good sign, I think, of the play caller understanding that sometimes he has to do both. The interior offensive line is going to determine everything with this offense. And they're improving. They're understanding it. It's not great. Want to see Haynes in there more, but who knows? He's botching stuff. Christian Haynes, their third round pick. But I really do think that this offense is ascending, and I think this offense is going to be a good offense, if not already is, because the quarterback, the trigger man, is spinning it, and the OC knows how to. He's trying to block it up so they can let him push the ball. Even in week two, he hit a man, they call it a circus route, but it's basically an out route. It's a deeper out comeback route. And he, I believe he hits JSN on it.
Yeah.
But Geno's taking an old school 7-step drop, hitching up into pressure and throws it. There's like 4 offenses doing that right now. So that's already, that's cool to me. And that's what you should be doing. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm saying it louder. I'm not even going to go quiet with it. But then even defensively, it's just sound stuff. It's Mike McDonald. He runs everything. He's a really good coach, really good communicator. I think people are realizing he has more personality than he let on. Like he's got more to him. Mm. He's funny as hell. But he is a guy that is – these guys are now pointing in the right direction on defense. I thought the last couple of years under Pete Carroll, they're sloppy. They're playing players that shouldn't have been there anymore, like a Bobby Wagner or something like that. Sorry, my son's young O right now. He didn't like that Bobby Wagner take. But then
disrespectful to a future Hall of Famer.
I know. I love Bobby Wagner, so I always hate when I have to say it. But notice how the Commanders' defense looks right now. But when I watch the Seahawks defense, have they played the best offenses in the world? No. But again, it's good when you make the bad offenses look like that. And they have answers and they adjust. That both sides of the ball with the Seahawks adjust in the second half, which speaks to their coaching. But yeah, I think they're going to be in a lot of ball games. I was optimistic about them before the year, but they haven't dissuaded anything. Even if the first half against the Broncos was a little ugly on offense, they adjusted. This has been one of the best teams that's adjusted from the first half to the second half, statistically too. It's not just eye test. I wrote about it last week. I think the Seahawks went from like the 20th offense success rate in the first half to like a top 8 offense in the second half. So that is why, again, I'm optimistic that they're going to figure out this personnel even more. The digging up touchdown, I'm so glad he brought it up, is a great example of that. Yeah, I'm bullish on this team. They have a good quarterback. The offensive line woes are always going to worry me.
Yeah.
And they still are with this team, but they have a lot of good going on right now and they're adding layers. So it's all the signs you want to see. Yes, they're 3-0. But even the process leading up to the 3-0 has been good so far.
Yeah, I mean, from like a fantasy perspective, I agree with you that I see this is one of the best coach teams in the NFL so far, which is
yes.
The difference, I think, between good and bad coach teams is very, very stark right now. This is one of the teams that's standing out in that way. I think as long as Zach Charbonnet is the start running back, he's an every week start in fantasy because we like the way this offense is. Like JSN, I get that it's been 2 down games, 1 massive game. But that's the type of receiver I want us to stick in my flex, basically, depending on the rest of your roster. You know, you might have better options, but if he's your receiver 3 in fantasy, I feel really good about that because there's going to be weeks for him. You know, their upcoming schedule, they play the Lions on Sunday night. That's a team that's been beat up in the slot. You know, he's still a guy that's mostly running as that slot receiver, 85.7% of his routes last week in a slot. So that could be a big week for him. You know, even games like Giants, you know, the damn 49ers, the Falcons, there's some spots in here for a JSN. And like, you know, we just talked about Tutu Atwell and Mike Williams. I'll just say that Tyler Lockett, you know, he's another guy that's going to be he's always been a little volatile. There's going to be weeks where I think he's just completely uninvolved. And then there's going to be weeks where he runs the 3rd most routes on the team, but gets targeted on 25% of his routes because Geno knows like, oh yeah, I trust this guy. Like I trust the hell out of this guy and he's going to run the route the way it's supposed to be. So when we get to bye weeks and stuff like that, Lockett's a guy that after week 2 was just universally dropped in a ton of fantasy leagues. There are going to be weeks where it's like, all right, geez, the best I could do is Tyler Lockett. And like, because we trust this offense, I'm willing to trust the 3rd receiver here.
Yeah. And they're going to, you mentioned that there's going to be game scripts with that. And in a real football sense, it's really good that the OC and Grubb is willing to try do anything to score points. Like, hey, I'm going to run it 5 straight times. Or, hey, Geno, get ready to go in empty. We're going to chuck it every time. That's a good sign that he's not just committed to like, well, we got to get our numbers. Fantasy wise, that's going to be frustrating sometimes. Don't get me wrong, but I loved what you said. JSN and Charbonnet and Metcalf, of course, but Charbonnet and JSN to me are just locks to have in there somewhere because I do think this offense will find ways to be productive in some way. And I want a piece of it. Luckily I have plenty of it, but it's been a good signs already. And I thought they're going to have some early kind of growth issues. I'm just trying to think like their future schedule. But you mentioned how well coached they are. The whole NFC West is just so freaking well coached.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, the Cardinals on both sides of the ball. I know the defense actually looked really good in the second half against the Lions, but that offense, man, they're force feeding MHJ so much.
What an overcorrection. I mean, thank God. But what an
overcorrection. Oh, my God. Kyler, it's so a lot of like 3x1 concepts is you have two reads as a quarterback for some coverages. Sometimes it's, oh, I can read this out against cover three. Or if I like my one-on-one, I can take it. Kyler has literally taken every single one-on-one. And I'm not making that up. He is just effing the read. And usually I'd be like, oh, you know, read it out. But it's like,
I get it.
Yeah. But he's going to make it happen. They're either going to never have this. I texted this to somebody. I said, they're either going to have never going to have chemistry because they've dropped a few so far and haven't hit so far. Or Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to go for 1,500 yards and 20 touchdowns the rest of the year because Kyler is going to force feed him every week. But yeah, just saying all this stuff, it's just watching the NFC West right now is actually very enjoyable, and the Seahawks are kind of leading the way.
Yeah. After that whole week one panic with Marvin Harrison Jr., he's been targeted on 32% of his routes in weeks two and three. So that's yeah, awesome. I did say when we talked about this, Nate, that at least I think I said it on this show, but you know, I'm on 1,000 shows. Like there's a real outcome that we look back on this one catch 4 yards from Marvin Harrison. It was like, what the hell were we talking? Remember what? Yeah. When Marvin Harrison's getting inducted in the Hall of Fame, people are like, remember when he had one catch for 4 yards in his rookie debut? And like the next 2 weeks, it hasn't been perfect, but the next 2 weeks definitely looks a lot more like, yeah, that's what we're going to
do. That's what's going to look like. Yeah.
All right. Let's take one last break here and then transition to a game that has another very highly drafted rookie wide receiver right after this. All right, Nate. Thursday Night Football, Cowboys at Giants. I mentioned, you know, teasing Malik Nabers' discussion. Let's save that for the end here. And let's talk a little bit about the Cowboys when they have the ball here. Not been perfect so far with the old Dallas Cowboys here. No. So, yeah. I mean, yes, we producer call in the chat. Yes, we do have to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. The CD stuff has been whatever. People definitely are ragging harder on Brandon Ayuk. I don't think CD has looked great so far to start because, hey, listen, you got to play to be in football shape. You have to play football. And I know nobody wants to practice anymore, but it helps to have been in practice all offseason. Get your money, guys. Get your money. Totally on player side here. Pro Brandon Ayuk holding out. Pro CeeDee Lamb holding out. But like,
I am too.
This is what happens as a result of that. So
yep,
I'm not worried about either of those players long term. I'm just accepting like, hey, we're taking a bit of a slow start here. It is what it is. But the problem with Dallas is that unlike San Francisco, where it's like, okay, cool, we'll just drop bombs with Juwan Jennings because we can do that. I don't think the Cowboys have found really any other answers on offense in the last couple of weeks.
No, Brandon, we just talked about for a while at the beginning of the show, and I actually wrote a note down to myself and actually works out great. I get it in right now. Is we talked about contested catches and we talked about guys working in zone and the differences maybe working in match and single high. And we even mentioned Tutu Atwell. Watch the Cowboys and watch Brandon Cooks get swallowed up on those routes that they run so much in that offense. And I'm going to give Mike McCarthy some leeway here. It's what Dak prefers. Mm-hmm. Dak prefers those routes, not the personnel that fits it. Dak CD. Yeah. Hell yeah. Totally fits that personnel. Davante Adams, Jordy Nelson back in the Packers. Totally fits that personnel. Even Michael Gallup when he was rolling, totally fits that personnel. Cooks is a move guy.
Yeah.
Cooks has to catch stuff on rolling and running away from guys. He did catch one of these stop routes, but that's why you feel a little stagnation in this offense. Teams know that they're going to CD 1, 2, and 3. All right, make Brandon Cooks beat us one-on-one. Jake Ferguson's rolling back, but Jake Ferguson's going to catch those seam routes. It's just a different – those are hard. They asked Dak to complete harder balls to Jake Ferguson. He doesn't get a bunch of gimmies in this offense. He doesn't get a lot of nakeds and a lot of, like, you know, cheapies. So that's why this offense just feels hard right now is – and when you don't have a run game – I mean, the Cowboys run game last year was not good, but the pass game was so hyper efficient that it made up for it. But now it's like it's all taken a step back. The O-line's actually fine, but not great as it's been. Like last year was great. And I think that helped a lot, too. So a lot's been on Dak. It's just the offense is just going to feel hard, I think, for the rest of the year. And I actually came around watching it last night. I was like, okay, there's actually more going on here than maybe I watched when I first eye test. Freaking Hunter Lepke, their fullback, might be my favorite player in the league right now.
Oh, there you go.
Dude, I think he went to South Dakota State, one of those schools. But he's a fullback that wears 40, but they use him as a tight end. North Dakota State, thank you. He's a Bison. They use him on like corner routes and stuff because he can roll, and he beat Kyle Hamilton one-on-one on a corner route. And it blew my mind that a guy wearing number 40 is beating Kyle Hamilton. He's actually a legitimately good player. I don't know if that matters for fantasy purposes, but in real football terms, it's nice. But the offense just feels tight. I think it's going to feel tight because this is just their personnel makeup. And we haven't talked about the defense that allows like 9 yards a carry right now.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't even know what to say about that defense, but
we can find some player props that might work.
We will absolutely find some player props that
but
work.
No,
on that.
It's just the offense too is Dak is Dak. I actually TV compared to all 22 and God, everyone that's listening to me is going to just be like, of course you say this. It's more impressive on all 22. Dak's always going to look better in all 22 than TV. Still just missed a couple, but I think it's hard. It's hard to when guys take out CD, it's like, all right, someone else has got to win. Oh, you guys can just run this coverage because we're going to face another second and long or third and long because that's what we're going to be behind the sticks. Guys got to win. And it's just that's what it feels right now. It's just everything feels really tight with this offense. I don't think bad, but just tight. Yeah. Just a tight offense right now.
They're trying to push the ball down the field to like Jalen Tolbert, 20.6 average depth of target in week 3. I mean, Tolbert's at least from a player prop perspective, because this team plays so much single high coverage. They're like a top 7 single high team right now. So like they try to really close that middle of the field. So mm-hmm. if they can get a shot off or a shot or two off to Tolbert, he's at like 29.5 prop projection. Like I don't mind an over on that.
Yeah.
But Jake Ferguson, man, the one that stood out to me, on BetMGM, over 4.5 catches plus 115. Like, I do think this is going to be a heavy Pepper Jake Ferguson game coming off that. Coming into his second game here. Again, a lot of like single high coverage. They love to do that play where CD runs like a big post route and just clears everything out. And then whoop, we just dump that thing off to insert tight end here. It used to be Schultz. Now it's Jake Ferguson. I think Ferguson's got a little more pop to him than Dalton Schultz. So I could see this being let's really get some Jake Ferguson involved here. Maybe we get a shout out to Tolbert, because I agree with you. Like, Cooks has had his moment, but I mean, dude, I totally agree with you that he is what he is at this point. And even at his peak, he probably wasn't a great fit in this type of attack.
Yeah, it's now he's a number 3 in a passing attack, but it's a different role. It's just not this offense. It's maybe the Chiefs, like something like that. I'm trying to think of offenses that have guys on the move. It's just a miscast. It worked a little bit more last year because of how they got to use them and how they use CD kind of opened other things up. But yeah, it's just one. Like if I'm looking props wise on this side of the ball, I warned people at the beginning of the year, this is one of my favorite ones because I like it, is over Dak rushing yards, over 9.5. Giants will go every which way with their looks. They kind of like to be a little kind of crazy with stuff. Guys not popping open. I see Dak tucking the ball, maybe running just for a couple, maybe just getting that one first down that gets him over 10 yards, or just two of these for like 4 or 5 yards where he gets the simple yards. Because I just see against this Giants defense that's might have some funkiness to it. That's a good way to kind of just beat the funkiness.
Yeah, and I really am concerned about, I think Rico Dowdle's going to get more and more touches. Like, if you want to bet an under, I'd go under Zeke Elliott 27.5 rushing yards.
That's literally what I was going to say. I would say under, it's at 27.5? Yeah, I'm going under there. They're trying to get Rico the ball more anyways. Zeke's there to be a pass protector. He's an auxiliary player right now for them.
Yeah, he had his token week one, like, bell cow kind of workload early on, but it's like, all right, that's
I watched this last game. They started getting Rico all the touches.
I don't know how high Rico can fly from the fantasy perspective, but he probably is still like a decent buy low as like a throw in trade type of guy here. So that's something to consider there. Let's flip this over to the Giants when they have the ball. It's just their offense is literally, where's Malik Nabers right now? I mean, he is getting a despicable amount of volume. I mean, it's gross with how much they're throwing the ball to him.
It's hilarious.
and to kind of come back to the conversation we had earlier, And I talked about this a lot as like with scouting these guys, Harrison and Odunze and Neighbors, and why I said, you know, I'm going to put them in the order that I just like preference style, whatever. If you want to put you want to put Neighbors at one, I could not care less. Like, go for it, because he has.
I got the argument for him. Totally. That's what I understood why people wanted him one, even if I had Harrison Jr. one. I totally understand. I totally understood why you'd prefer him.
Yeah. And I had him three in this. And, you know, obviously
I did too. I had Odunze too.
Same. So. I did as well. But and I mean, Odunze is going to be a great player. I'm very, very confident in that. Mm-hmm. He's definitely playing in the worst offense of the three, which is saying something considering one of these is quarterbacked by Daniel Jones. But I will say, like, you know, and I know this is just me like rolling my eyes at Dynasty Bros and stuff like that. Well, you know, if Garrett Wilson and Drake London were these guys, if they were as good as Malik Neighbors, they'd just get the ball or whatever. It's like, yo, Garrett Wilson will kill to catch passes from Daniel Jones, okay? Like, I know Daniel Jones is not good, but he's like, he's had seasons where he's been the 23rd best quarterback in the league. Zach Wilson can't even like start a full season, okay? So
no.
Your boy Desmond Ridder you know, got traded for Rondo Moore and then got cut. All right. Like, no disrespect, but
no, it's just, yeah, I think they would kill to have Daniel Jones, who at least is like, I know we make fun of him, but it's like, he's not like a, like he can run an offense.
Yeah. He's not, it's just he's that you're, not a, you're a clown.
He's just
out
not a needle
there.
Mover.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
he's replacement level.
They can do so much smoke and mirrors with him. That, and Neighbors is a great smoke and mirrors receiver, which is why, like when they, on the Yahoo draft show, when they took Malik Neighbors, my first thing that I said was, if one of these receivers is going to have to go here, the one who can survive this landing spot, I thought maybe not thrive, but he certainly is thriving. The one who can survive this landing spot is Malik Neighbors, because as much as I like Odunze, as much as I like Marvin Harrison, you can't do some of the layup stuff that you can do with a Malik Neighbors. Like, just he has cooked some people on routes. I still think like we can tighten a few things up, but there have been some moments where he has really cooked in man coverage. And I think the way he's shocked me, Nate, has been at the catch point. That's where, like, I mean, the body control, the athleticism is just insane stuff. That is an area where, like, I wish Garrett Wilson was a little better in that regard. And Malik Neighbors is already at that level. So I would throw that out there as, like, one thing that surprised me very early on. But, yeah, because he is just, you can get him those layup touches and he can get you yards after the catch, he's going to continue to produce in this way. I almost have no doubt about that. I am interested to see what he does in this matchup. But you know, you want to run the ball on the Dallas Cowboys, but at the same time, we're talking about a team that has had issues. You can get Malik Neighbors touches that are like extension of the run game type touches.
Yeah, I would almost like it more. Maybe it's just the Saints game doing a lot in my mind, like an over longest reception bet with Neighbors, and I do like the quantity because he is going to get he's going to get targets. He's going to get designs for him as well. Like that's a big thing too. He's the offense. He's the focal point. You're not going to like, yeah, they're going to run the ball and Devin Slow-Mo Singletary is going to get his touches and that's what they're going to do. But every pass play is going to go through Neighbors, even if he doesn't get the ball. So I think it's always just a safe bet if you're looking prop wise with him. But man, he
23 and a half is the longest reception, by the way.
Oh yeah. Take it. I can already picture like a 38, 40 yarder in this game. Like it's just because not even just the deep ball, like, you know, the Rashid Shaheed play against the Saints, against this Cowboys defense, but the like tackling on the short and intermediate stuff I could easily see him running away. They're running so much man and stuff like that. So I'll just run away from that and beat one guy and he has the juice to do it. That's a great point about the catch point stuff. He was such a weird watch sometimes because he would have some really cool sideline highlights and then he would drop a ball that came right at his face. Mm-hmm. And those guys always screw me up. It's like, how can you catch this one that one out of a million people can catch, but then you drop the one that I could catch, you know, but that's, hey.
But,
hey,
you know, he's been a little bit of that in the NFL so far. I mean, shoot.
It's kind
of
him.
That is, you got to live with kind of the ups and downs of that.
Yeah.
I mean, side I'm looking at fantasy points, they have him with 6 drops so far, which is a 16.2% drop rate. I mean, that is, even though he's been targeted a ton, that is still a lot. I mean,
it's probably over the middle and probably throws at his body.
Well, it's the one fourth down play, like against the Commanders.
Oh, I mean, Washington.
They might win that game if he catches that. So, I mean, he's not the best
Jones's
receiver.
Jones' best throw of the day if he drops.
God, I know. I know. And then meanwhile, against the Browns, he lines up in the slot and they run that like slot fade. And whoever Zero is on the Browns, I mean, just gets obliterated on that first rep there, and Daniel Jones just sails it over his head. So it's going to be a little bit of that, a little bit give and take.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You just deal with it. It's you're just hoping the quantity makes up for all the quality flashes that you see. I do like a different rookie because they're trying to force feed this a little bit. Theo Johnson. Yeah. Theo Johnson is at 1.5 receptions. He's got one, but they're trying. So I think over 1.5 receptions or over whatever is 14.5 receiving yards or anytime touchdown. So like Theo Johnson props, I'm kind of looking at a little bit too. The Cowboys are pretty weak at linebacker, very weak at linebacker. That does matter guarding tight ends and everything. So I think he can maybe sneak if they're going to focus so much on neighbors, maybe sneak and get a couple. I like Johnson a lot as a prospect, and it looks like they really like him too because they're trying to make him a part of this offense.
He's on the field for almost all the routes, man. 80% of the routes in week 3. He did drop a touchdown in that game. So they are.
I know.
Yeah, that was like, oh, damn, dude. I really should have got that one. But they're trying, and like he's definitely somebody to pay attention to for rookies over the course of the season. But I do like that in this game, particularly because of the linebacker issues that Dallas has. So, and obviously, you know, Devin Singletary is never going to be the sexiest play on the board. But if he's probably he's a fantasy starter in this game because the Cowboys run defense sucks. And I do think the over under on rushing attempts for him, 13.5 -125. The rushing yards is high, 60.5. I don't know if I can take the over on that. It's pretty high, but the attempts, I'm always a coward and I love to go with the rush attempts. However, Nate,
I like that.
I think that's going to transition to my final thing I'm going to ask you about this game. Who do you think wins this game? Because if the Giants can keep it close, I mean, the Giants always feel like they get their ass kicked by Dallas, so I don't even want to come in here and be like, oh, let's pretend this miracle world where the Cowboys don't just throttle the Giants in a primetime game. But if the Giants keep it close, like Singletary can definitely go over 13.5 rush attempts.
He can, and I think, again, when you're going to be like, you can run the ball. I think there's always a point of pride thing. You got to remember with the NFL team, so look at how the Colts defense played last week, right, where they get embarrassed too. And I know that defensive coordinator for the Cowboys got a lot of pride, Mike Zimmer. So that's why sometimes I always like to bet against the grain or go against the grain when I was a betting man, go against the grain where it's like, hey, there's so much hype about, oh, they're going to pound it. They know that too.
Yeah.
So they might have a focal point, anything like that. So I loved your angle there of rush attempts as opposed to rushing yards for Singletary, because again, they're going to, like, Dable doesn't want to throw the ball 50 times with Daniel Jones. He wants to have that perfect neutral game script, which means Singletary is going to get those touches. So I actually really like that angle. Who I think wins, though, I think the Cowboys win. I think they just outclass them. I really do like some of the things the Giants defense is doing. I think the Giants defense versus Cowboys offense is a really interesting scheme matchup and player matchup. But I just think that they just have a little too much. I think Micah Parsons can, you know, Andrew Thomas is good, but they can find ways to get after the passer. I think it's going to be a bit of an ugly game, but I think the Cowboys take it home.
All right, man.
What is the spread? Is it 4? What is it? 4.5?
I think it's 5.5. Cowboys.
5.5?
-5.5.
I don't know if they cover, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if they cover. Giants win, don't cover. That would be my prediction.
Cowboys win, don't cover. You mean, yeah.
What did I say? Giants?
Said Giants.
Cowboys win. Giants cover. Yeah. There we go.
Don't get Nate on the record as the Giants are going to win this game.
No, no. Yeah. This is what always happens. I had a great point about the Vikings yesterday, and then I rewatched the segment because I was like, ooh, that was fun. And I said Texans the entire time. So I'm hoping no one got confused in that segment. I don't think they did, but sorry about that if anyone listened to Football 301.
I think we can give you some grace. We're all doing a little bit too much talking at this point of the season. But
so much talking.
That is going to do it for us today on this show. Nate, appreciate you, buddy. What are you working on for the website this week?
3-0 teams. Actually, talking a little about the Seahawks.
Boom.
Seahawks, Steelers. Yeah, so it's great. Just talking about what's working, what's not working, what's to come. That's kind of what's going on Yahoo for Nate Tice.
Steelers 3-0, having scored 3 touchdowns, 1 touchdown per game.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Football, baby.
Football. Steelers football. It's great. I feel like a kid again.
What is
Bears
old?
Can't score a touchdown. Steelers can't score a touchdown. I feel like a kid.
What is old is new again. That is for sure. All right. That is going to do it for us on today's show. Shout out to Nate for another great episode. We will do our rookie check-in next week. Meanwhile, on Friday, tomorrow's show, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts join me to preview all of Sunday's week 4 action. Until then, we are out.